Helping Hand, weekly feature here on HPR One station statewide, airing at 5:30 each Friday afternoon and online in our growing Helping Hand directory at hawaiipublicradio.org, putting the spotlight on organizations or events in the community that offer assistance to the disabled and other folks in need. Aloha, I'm Dave Lawrence. This week we're learning about Kōkua Mau, and it's, according to their website, Hawaii's Hospice and Palliative Care Organization, a community benefit nonprofit made up of individual and organizational champions and supporters from hospitals, education, consumers, insurance, long-term care, and obviously hospices. We learn more about what they offer the community and also how we can assist them with our guest, Jeanette Kojane of Kōkua Mau. Thank you so much for taking some time to come to HPR and share a little bit about this.
Happy to be here.
And it should be noted, you're an HPR member and supporter, too.
So absolutely.
It's a return.
And a volunteer.
Yes, it's something that is familiar to you. I'm part of our family here. Fill us in on, I mean, there are undoubtedly a lot of the time, there are some organizations people know more about. Other organizations are doing the same amount of good, and people don't know about what they're doing or maybe how they help folks or how they could help them. Tell us a little bit about what you guys do.
Well, I really welcome the opportunity to talk about this. And, you know, a lot of people don't really want to breach this subject. They don't want to be... So Kōkua Mau, as you mentioned, is our hospice and palliative care organization. We work with fabulous people around the state, and we really strive to help people get information about decisions that they may need to make as their disease progresses. So we work with seriously ill people and their loved ones and their caregivers to help them to think through some of the decisions that they might have to make, make sure that they understand the resources that are in our community. So I find all the time that people don't understand that they should be thinking ahead, that they should be planning ahead and having these important conversations. And so that's one of the things we really strive to do. We find that this is a good way to prevent crisis.
And on that note of why, because sometimes it's good for people to see a scenario of why it's important. So the reason, so you say, you know, this is an important thing to plan ahead for. Mm-hmm. I can think of one, which is a very easy one. Obviously, you're a professional on this topic, so you can take this a bit further. But I can think, you know, you could very suddenly become incapacitated and critical decisions could be there. It could be that you're... next of kin in your family, you don't even speak to anymore and are disengaged from legally. And the last thing you'd want is to be incapacitated and end up in their care because there's no legal directive that would reposition you to be in the care of your actual friends or people who care about you. That's just one of a myriad of things that could go wrong. So I'm trying to make it so that people understand why it's important. Mm-hmm. So please fill in what else you see as why you say this is really important to get done now.
Right. So this planning in advance, we also call it advanced care planning, can really help to prevent a crisis and reduce stress and make sure you get the care, the right care at the right time in the right place. And, you know, it's very important that people think ahead, not only about what care they would want, but who would make decisions for them if they can't speak for themselves. So most of us don't plan on needing this information, but it's much better that people have a plan and don't need it than the other way around. So if you can talk ahead with your loved ones, and if you can make decisions, choosing people, choosing an agent who will speak for you, then if something happens, God forbid, in a car crash and you can't speak for yourself, that agent can come in and help to make some decisions. In Hawaii, we fortunately have a system where it doesn't have to be the next of kin, but you can choose who it is that's going to be making decisions for you.
I'm not sure it has to be the next of kin anywhere because legally you can stipulate who it is who... right, that you would have. I mean,
correct.
Can't.
But in your scenario where we didn't know who was, you know, where you hadn't done anything, some states it would be, you know, the spouse or a sibling or something like that. But in Hawaii, we don't necessarily have that situation.
Okay, so if that happened,
so that's why.
If that happened, you wouldn't be legally bound to that family that you were no longer connected to.
Correct.
Okay.
But having, you know, so having disagreements with family members, which we know happens all the time, that's a really good reason to have done this advanced care planning.
So there are no questions.
So there are no questions. That's right. So, but you know, it's important to say, so all of everybody needs what's called an advance directive, and that comes out of conversation. So for Kōkua Mau, the most important thing you can be doing is having conversations with yourself and with your loved ones about what decisions you, about what, having decisions about what kind of care you would like at the end of your life. So, and then once you've had those conversations, also asking questions of the doctor, visit our website, find information, you can document those. And an advance directive, it's something that everybody over 18 should have, that appoints an agent and talks vaguely about your wishes about certain questions, mostly CPR, artificial, and then artificial nutrition and hydration. But you need to find out information about that. Unless you went to medical school or nursing school, most of us get our information from television, and then television is not a great place to get medical information. So again, for us, what you should do is do your homework, think about these things, and then you can begin to document them.
So everyone can benefit from what we were just mm-hmm. talking about, which is laying out this plan. There are a lot of folks, however, they end up at the end of their life, and this stuff has not been worked out.
Mm-hmm.
And often when you have worked out some of these details, there are a lot more that seem to come up. Despite you thought you had every single one of these documents laid out, there are a lot of them, and there are a lot of ways things could go wrong after the fact. What are some of the crisis scenarios that you guys deal with, or if not that, when people out there are thinking about other ways that they may want to take advantage of reaching out to you or other services you offer or other things that may be going wrong in a person's life that have not planned everything and they're coming close to the end, what could be made available to help them?
So we actually have a lot of resources in our community, and I encourage people to visit the website and to look and see who is out there and ask questions. So, for instance, a lot of people misunderstand what hospice is and what hospice can do. This is a wonderful service that exists on all the islands, and I think that it's really important for people to understand what kind of wonderful care they offer. It's an additional level of support that can come in wherever you live, whether it's at home or a long-term care facility or another kind of a nursing home, and help you deal with emotional, physical, and spiritual suffering. And they also help with your loved ones who may be understandably upset in this time as well. So hospice provides really a wonderful service that a lot of people misunderstand. And having done this for a long time, I have never had anybody say, having done this a long time, people always say, oh, I wish I'd called hospice earlier. That's what they always say, because that level of support is really wonderful. And then with palliative care, they're also able to offer that help with relieving suffering of various kinds. But that then is usually inside of a hospital or through some of the health plans. But we're actually, you know, we're more in the process of developing that community-based services.
Differentiate, if you can, the difference between the differences between hospice and palliative care.
Yeah, it's a really good question. So palliative care is a field of medicine that helps to relieve suffering. That can be emotional, physical, spiritual suffering. Most people know about palliative care as relieving pain. So that's really what they're experts at. But there's a lot of other suffering that goes on. As I mentioned, the emotional and the spiritual suffering is can be very devastating for people. So there is a team approach. There's a doctor, a nurse, a social worker, chaplain. Whoever the team is will then help the person who's facing serious illness and their team, their loved ones. It could be family, could be not family, could be those other people that that are important to us. And those two teams then are what make up palliative care. So you're board certified in palliative medicine. We have palliative care programs in most of our hospitals, and we're building palliative care in the community.
Less at home, I'm hearing from you, because I understand it's somewhat provided on a home healthcare basis too.
Right. So some people are working on that. But it's different than from hospice. Hospice is primarily provided in the home, and it deals with the last 6 months of life. So with palliative care, you can be getting curative treatments at the same time as you're getting those other treatments, that other care. But hospice is then when you have stopped with the curative treatments, but are still providing, are still dealing with all of that, the suffering that, that can go on as someone is in, at the end of their life. And most of that care then is at home.
These agencies that, and again, you, that's, it's great because you can paint a more local picture of how things are here. But in other situations in the United States, a person looking for these sorts of companies, there are a lot of choices. And with the choices, much like one of my guests recently was talking about, you know, consequences come with choices. And not every organization under the name hospice or that provides palliative care is going to be comparable. In other states, they're not all created equal.
So I will tell you that there are guides online to choosing a hospice. You know, the national, there are some national organizations that have come up with guidelines to ask. In this state, we actually are quite different than other places. Hmm. We have 9 hospices in the whole state.
We have 9 agencies that provide this service in the
home. Correct. That's right. So each island has, we have coverage around the islands, and there's actually only 2 places where there's more than one agency. We have 4 hospices on Oahu, and there are now 2 hospices that work on Maui. Otherwise, there's 1 per island.
So except for those instances you just pointed out, there is no choice of who's going to provide that care.
Correct.
Wow.
But I will also tell you that those hospices are providing excellent care.
And are they managed or monitored in a different way then than these other states where there's literally dozens of companies that you would be hiring? Are these part of the government, or are they different, or are they still a private entity?
So we have 1 for-profit hospice and the rest are not-for-profit hospices. But I think the more important thing is the level of care that's being offered. And I will tell you, I was just up in Washington at a national meeting. Boy, am I glad that we're in Hawaii dealing with what we deal with, because you're right, in some other places, the type of care that's being provided is certainly not what you'd want for your loved one. But I don't see that in Hawaii. And it's important to say that there are a lot of agencies that are trying to help people. So I don't speak to home health. I don't speak to case management. What I can talk about is hospice and palliative care. So I there certainly has been discussion nationally about people doing things that I'm so glad they're not doing here.
Yeah, it's a really different system. I mean, other states have dozens of providers. You're on your own to choose them. And the care that you get may be really shocking to you who they send to your home to take care of you. You really would. Mm-hmm. In some instances, you wouldn't believe that is a medical professional or is allowed to fulfill the roles that we're talking about here today.
Right. Well, and I can tell you that I do not hear those stories here. I don't know if complaints are being made elsewhere, but I'm honest with you that
Would they come to you? Do people have an outlet to complain to?
If we have a state, you know, you can call the state. There's an office. You can make complaints about health care.
So that's what
people need to do.
That they have those in those other states, too.
Right. But I can tell you, I don't hear them. I hear people very supportive of hospice, very supportive. They find that the care that's provided is excellent.
And your agency is not one that people would go make the complaints to. You're saying it would be you'd have to go to the state.
Correct. And if anybody, I've been doing this for a while, no one has ever made a complaint.
To you guys.
No, but I could tell them who to call if they do that. So
yeah, and that's the other frustrating thing about these is often the process in those states is the same. If you have an issue, you can make a complaint with the state. Mm-hmm. State will do some sort of investigation. And again, these things, the states are overloaded. The states don't have the resources because in a lot of other places, that is the same protocol. You'd call and you'd have extraordinarily limited resources available to you once you reach the state. Right. May not put a dent in the problem you're facing.
One of the things that we strive to do with Kukua Mau is to really bring everybody together at the same table. So I've heard that from colleagues in other states that there are these sort of random hospices out there doing stuff. people that are, you know, pull them in, and that tends to not happen. So we do a lot of education and networking, and people know each other and they sit at the same table. So that's this other good thing about Hawaii, and we're so small, but then we all know each other. So we really have seen a fabulous collaboration in hospice and palliative care, helping people. You know, everybody is really working together to help people with serious illness, and they collaborate. We collaborate on in training and sharing information and sharing perspectives. So, for instance, our board, we have people that go and speak at another institution, even, you know, if they don't work there. We do across the state. We're doing a lot of training under the umbrella of Kukua Mau, but getting that information out to people to help to build what's going on in our community. We talk about being as far upstream as possible. Again, we want people to think early about this. So how can we help people who are caring for seriously ill people? The person may be far away from hospice, but they need, you know, how can we help them for instance, discussions about advanced planning now.
Yeah, that need to happen way before. Some of the sections, and when you go there, kukuamau.org is the website. There is sections caregiving, advanced care planning. We've talked about some of these things essentially throughout what we're talking about. One of the things on there, and it could be an overlap, forgive me because it's your area, and it's just one that I'm trying to learn and share things from. Provider orders for life-sustaining treatment, PULSED. Is that essentially what we're talking about, this end-of-care directives?
Right. So thanks. That's good to ask about PULSE, because I think it's something that's really important for people to understand. So conversations, super important. Everybody needs an advance directive. However, a PULSE is a medical order, and a PULSE is really for someone who would be in the last year or two of life. Mm. And the important thing about a PULSE, and we actually worked this year on legislation to expand PULSE, so we're really happy about the positive legislation this year. This medical order then will go home with somebody, and if you call 911 and they come, they can act on that PULSE. Or if somebody is transferred from one place to another, they can act on the PULSE. An advance directive is not a medical order, so it gives direction for care, but a PULSE is something that is a medical order. So for us, this has really been a game changer, that because without a PULSE, you have the EMS will do everything. So they would attempt resuscitation and get somebody to the emergency room and then sort everything out. And for a lot of people, that's the appropriate thing to do. But for people who are approaching the end of their life, especially people who are more frail, a PULSE can really help to make sure that you are not getting unwanted or unnecessary care.
Yeah. No doubt about that. That's some pretty important stuff.
So if I can tell a story about me. So unfortunately, my father passed away last year. He had congestive heart failure. And he, like a lot of older people, had a number of different things going on. And he was just getting frailer and frailer, more and more frail. So my dad was getting more and more frail. And he had a hospitalization. He fell down. He hurt himself. They sent him home. And I said, we need a PULSE. We got to have a PULSE, because what are we going to do if EMS is called? And this was up in California. So I actually ended up doing two in-services for the folks there, but they have PULSE. But this was a small hospital. So we were able to get a PULSE for my dad, so that if EMS was called, they were not going to attempt resuscitation if he had already died a natural death.
Right.
Because one of the things, unfortunately, that happens as people get more frail, trying to resuscitate people, doing the CPR can be a very violent intervention, and it can break bones in your chest, and especially for a frail elderly, you can cause a lot more problems.
Just removing people from their home and the transport, all of it is extraordinarily traumatic, and if it doesn't need to happen or if it's not done for the right reason, it can really cause some problems.
Right. So for us, PULSE has really been a great opportunity where people, you can be doing it with your primary care physician, discharge from the hospital, moving from home to a long-term care facility. So it's a provider order. So either an advanced practice registered nurse or a physician signs the order after having this communication with the patient based on their condition. And that portable order then goes with the person. So people are then encouraged to put on the fridge or the back of the door, and EMS knows to look for that. Right. But if someone goes to long-term care, so that's what happened with my dad. He went to long-term care. We had the pulse there. So a lot of those conversations, then you have a jumping-off point. We've already talked about these things.
Got to post them. You got to post the pulse.
Yes, I misunderstood you.
You can't leave it around the house somewhere else.
Correct.
Those things, even when you have them done, if they're not visible, you could run into all the problems talking about.
You know, and I think people don't appreciate fortunately, most people are not going through this all the time with their loved ones, that people don't appreciate that it really is important to have done this paperwork, had these conversations, and make things accessible.
These situations do happen.
These situations do happen. And even though we hope that they don't, they do happen.
And they can happen once you've made a lot of plans, too. It's shocking the amount of plans that you can have laid out. I mean, you think you've got the lawyers, you think you've got the documents, you think the right end-of-life stuff has been done. And that's why I was eager to have you on, because I hope that anyone who's out there, heaven forbid, they're incapacitated and unable to make these decisions, you really want to have them laid out now. And as you pointed out, 18 and up, it seems sadly relevant to make this solemn decision. But for folks listening who have a loved one, facing, deep crisis with their health, or folks listening who are facing these challenges themselves, KOKUAMAU.org. And the phone number, if you can't find what you're looking for at the website, the phone number is 808-585-9977, info@kokuamau.org. And very easily for you, HawaiiPublicRadio.org. You can find this entire interview, information about them, links, everything from today.
I'd like to emphasize that I hope people do see us as a resource. Reach out to us and we can help you get information. We also have, for instance, a speakers bureau. So if you're sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, how do I start with these difficult conversations? Maybe we could come to the office and do a lunch and learn. Mm. We really like, we count on membership from organizations, and we like to collaborate with companies. A lot of employers are worrying about their employees who are thinking about this. They're taking care of their parents. They're taking care of their in-laws. They're worrying about Uncle Chemo. We can come in, do a lunch and learn. We can help you with these issues. We could come to your temple or your church, see us as a resource, and we can, we're happy to provide speakers to talk about these issues as well. Sometimes it's easier in a group to talk about these things. So Kukuamau really is trying to help people where they are to get that information.
What are some ways folks can help you guys out?
So Kukuamau exists because of generous organizations and individuals who are members who donate money to help us with our mission and our vision. So we really count on those folks. Mm. But the other thing that I would just challenge us all to do is to have those conversations and think about how can you facilitate those conversations. So if you work someplace, can you invite us in for a lunch and learn? Can you invite us to come to the temple or the church? Can you be brave and start those conversations with your loved ones? I think that we need to start these conversations as early as possible, and also to lean in for those people who are in the midst of a crisis and be there for you. We may not always know what to say to people. Showing up, being present, listening. I think that we in Hawaii are in a special place and that we do take care of each other. So for me, that would be something I would ask, is to challenge us all to have these conversations. I mentioned before, too, we work with other professionals and organizations, and there may be somebody, there may be other resources that you can call on. So hopefully people will think of us as a resource. We know it's a difficult subject, and if I think back to conversations with my parents, they weren't easy, but they were some of the most important conversations we ever had.
It's almost like there couldn't be enough preparation, believe it or not, for the kinds of scenarios you may be faced that you couldn't even imagine might come up. And even with the best paperwork, it's really almost like it's a, and it's a really probably the kind of conversation that when you engage in this with your loved one, you will stumble upon some other really important dialogue that is good to just share with them and that you will never forget.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, and sometimes you need an outsider to spark that. Sometimes you need an outsider to make a conversation more, to go easier. When I think with my dad, I knew that man all of my life. It was not easy to have some of those conversations. And I was really glad there was a nurse in the room who could help with the conversations to make things go forward. But you know, it's very true that, that these are difficult conversations. You know, when you were saying that, I was reminded there's a thing we say. It was a wise hospice nurse who once said, there's five things you should say in an end-of-life conversation. Please forgive me. I forgive you. Thank you. I love you. And goodbye. I had to do a talk on September 11th, that many years ago. And it just occurred to us sitting in that room talking about this that we could say four of those things to our loved ones right now. We're not going to say goodbye because you're probably not dying, but asking for forgiveness, listening to what people have to say, thanking people, reminding people that we love them. We could do that. So that's kind of what this is about, too. And for me, those conversations, you know, sometimes you, I think back to conversations with my mom. She died of a brain tumor 18 years ago. And we were having conversations after she was getting sicker. I carried around stuff that I asked for forgiveness for that she didn't even remember. So I had carried all this stuff around and she could absolve me of that guilt.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, that had you only talked, you would.
Yeah.
You would have heard it from them. So despite your inclination to go to that place of guilt, you would know. You would have the memory of your loved one reminding you, don't do that and
right.
don't think that. And that you may understandably want to go to that place and feel that that's a way to honor them or whatever. And it's under, you know, it's a normal, natural thing. But you're right. That's a good purpose of those. And I would just add, I had Rob Halford from Judas Priest on recently, and he said this phrase about life, and I'll never, ever forget it. He said, you know, this thing you're on, it is a very, very difficult trip to figure out. And so on that note of the fifth thing, I lost my mom, but my mom is with me, you know, and I know it. And that's a very strange thing to say, especially if you were never a spiritual guy your whole life. But one of the wisest things, you don't want to be left in a really difficult spot mentally. And some of those conversations, not only will you take care, hopefully take care of a lot of this paperwork, because you may not take care of all of it. as much
right.
as you try to do,
yeah.
you'd be surprised what may come out. But those other little bonus conversations are kind of like what you're talking about could come out, you know, and they could help you because you'll go, you know what, I could feel bad, but they told me.
Right.
We dealt with this. And it will give you that strength.
That's right. You know, I think that our community in Hawaii is really at this in this place of change where those of us who are making decisions for our parents or for our in-laws, we're figuring out what does it mean to be a dutiful daughter? What does it mean to be a loving son? And making decisions that we're not really prepared for. And before, to other people, it may feel like, oh, I'm killing mom by making this decision, when in reality, that is not what is happening. You're making decisions to maintain quality of life for people, to making decisions to help them throughout their life dealing with those issues that come along. So that I think in Hawaii, we're at this place where our community needs to think, what does it mean to be a dutiful daughter? What does it mean to be taking care of your loved ones? And that's why for us, hospice and palliative care is so important, because we really emphasize this quality of life. Maybe another intervention, a intense medical procedure is not going to help make somebody better, that what we should be emphasizing is that quality of life, and that emphasizing, listening to the person, what's important for you now? Okay, you want to go to the beach, you want to go fishing, you want to spend time with the grandkids, let's make that happen. Or you want to spend time working in your garden. Let's make that happen. So that we also, it's back to what's important for people, And oftentimes we're not thinking about that in the rat race anyway. What's important for people? So we can take that step back. So, and then for those of, for the us kids who've had to make those decisions, it's much easier because we love our parents, we miss them, but we're not racked with the guilt of making wrong decisions. Did I second guessing? Okay. Did I do what I did? So, you know, I see over and over again people that second guess because they didn't think about it enough. And
there will be plenty of that.
You're right. But
this just helps to alleviate some of
that. It helps to move things along.
Yeah,
right.
I mean,
I love your idea of, you know, thinking what would they be saying to us? Because we often say that, like, if your mom was at the table having this conversation about the type of care she'd want, what would she be saying? My mom would be reassuring me that I did my best and I, you know, she doesn't hold it against me what I'm doing or what I did or...
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, as I said, goodbye. Not sure there is one. And on that note, it's certainly great that we have, a loving community here and there's a sense of aloha and it's a different sort of lifestyle in a lot of ways. And we've pointed out some of those in this conversation on the hospice care versus how it is in the mainland. But those themes are universal as humanity evolves. And these topics of death, this topic, you know, and loved ones, people you care about. You know, Hawaii has a million people, 1.3 million. The Earth has 8 billion. So when we think of who we are, I never think of myself as anything but part of the 8 billion. Mm-hmm. You know, we're 8 billion people. This thing, this transition, death, is something we all share. And it's, while cultures are different, the truth is we're all the same, every single one of us. That's another thing that guy said in that interview. Stood on the stage all over the world and he said, we're all the same. You know, and the things, they echo in my head. It is true, we're here. But we're people, too. You know, and these themes, this is the wise advice you've just offered. I hope people can take and plug into people they love all over the planet. Because these things that you're talking about are enormously valuable for all people. And that's really cool that you are so tough to go and take these experiences and then help folks out. People who want to help Kukua Mau out, money's always good. Your skills, your time, you can see ways you could be useful to them. 808-585-9977, kukuamau.org, info@kukuamau.org is their email address, and of course at hawaiipublicradio.org. I've got all this material online. And unusual conversation today, a special one. I really appreciate you devoting all this time to it. Jeanette Kojane, Kukua Mau, thanks for taking time for me and for doing what you do for all these folks in need.
Happy to help.